G'day, Don. How are you?
Hello, Annie, and g'day to all your listeners. I hope you're all well and girding the loins for the next phase of the various struggles that we're all engaged in.
That's about it. It feels like there's a big weight on our shoulders at the moment.
And it's a very scary situation, of course. We're going to devote most of our time to the issue of equal pay for working women and the impact of that on other women and other people who are dependent upon working women. But just a quick comment to sort of reinforce the anti-war message that Kevin and yourself have been quite correctly pushing forward. I've just been reading of stories that in the US, in England, in the United Kingdom, the British Labour Party has the leadership of the British Labour Party, the dominant right-wing leadership of the British Labour Party, have threatened with expulsion any of its members who appear in anti-war rallies that include criticisms of the USA and NATO.
Wow.
And one wonders whether we are going to see that particular development play itself out in Australia. So all of us need to be on alert to ensure that it does not. It is absolutely essential, in my view, that for all of the citizens of the region, that the anti-war movement be able to highlight the lead-up over 20 to 30 years towards this megalomaniacal decision by Putin to invade the Ukraine, that it lies very much as well in the sphere of responsibility of the USA and the major nations, the big nations in NATO, that they have pushed the situation to the where it is at the present time, as much as Putin's own brand of stupidity is now bringing it to a tragic situation.
I'm sure he's not a very good chess player. It's hilarious, but in an awful way, that Boris in England was a headline coming out of England was that Boris apparently said that Putin was attacking democracy, and I just thought, oh my goodness. We're really scraping the bottom of the barrel, aren't we?
Yes, well, in Australia itself, there are progressive organisations who, quite correctly, of course, are condemning the invasion, as we all should be, but who are staying silent or unable to say anything of any sense about the history that has been driven by the USA and NATO in Western Europe, but has pushed the militarisation of countries in Central and heading towards Eastern Europe. And I think that you can't understand anything about how to solve this problem unless you take that into account. If you leave out the USA-NATO drive eastwards, then it means that any agreement that is somewhat of a peace will be fraught because it doesn't deal with the reality confronting citizens on both sides of the borders.
So let's we can't.
I'm only going to alert people to that. I think
we have to move on because you wanted particularly to talk about the ACTU's report, Women and Work, and why it's important.
The latest report from the ACTU is extremely valuable reading. It's actually it's not too long for people who are, you know, time challenged and so on. It's focused on how Morrison is missing for working women. That's its headline, but it actually is quite a good summary of the major. It drills down into several major issues, and of course, it's all in the context of International Women's Day. Coming up next week, and all of the commemorations and celebrations and demonstrations that will occur around all of that, despite the attempt to dilute it by the ruling class. The second aspect of the current situation, of course, is the annual wage review, in which closing the pay gap between the work done by women and men is one of the major the themes of debate. So it's a really good report, I think. It's available at the ACTU website, and there's a good summary. It highlights seven major problems faced by working women, with its damaging flow-on effects to families and communities in general. And without diminishing those seven major problems, and in the context of the annual wage review, the first two do focus on wages. Firstly, they assert that women on average earn less $483 less per week than a man.
Oh, my God, that's huge.
That is huge. And retire with about half the amount of super as a man. The second point they make about the situation is that women are more likely to be in low-wage and insecure work, and therefore more likely to have lost work or hours during the pandemic. Then the report highlights the views of working women about the standard of living and the economy. And I won't go over all of the points, but two of them are particularly important. 77% of women are saying that the cost of living has gotten worse compared to 67% of men. And 55% of women are saying that their job security has gotten worse compared to 45% of men. Mm. There are other important points there that it's worth reading. Then the report puts forward a five-point immediate program that elaborates on that, that includes as the very first of this five-point immediate program, introducing stronger equal pay laws in the Fair Work Act. And they are a polishing up. The detail of that particular preliminary point is a polishing up and strengthening of what the union movement as a whole was saying about the Fair Work Act prior to the last election with the Change the Rules campaign. Somewhat confusingly, I'll just add a couple of other general points to make sure that listeners are right on top of it. That demand is very relevant to the annual wage review, because how the annual wage review is conducted is defined by the Fair Work Act, and then within that framework, as is interpreted by the president and the expert panel that actually reviews wages and determines whether and how much there should be an increase in the minimum wage and the minimum rates and awards. Now, currently, the Fair Work Act, reinforced by how the Fair Work Commission's expert panel interprets it, does not permit the annual wage review to be used directly to close the gender pay gap. And so the
ACTU, say that again. They don't actually see it as being significant.
Well, they do see it as being significant, but what they say that the Act is, this is the broken rules.
Right. So let's write some rules that mean that you can't actually deal with the elephant in the room. Go on.
Yeah, that's sort of what's going on. They're virtually saying that the way in which the Act defines how the annual wage review should work means that it cannot directly close the gender pay gap.
That's so pathetic. We've got such a pathetic federal government. They are just pathetic people.
Well, this Fair Work Act was designed not by this federal
government, but
by the Labor government.
Great pathetic.
Opportunity in 2007-09, when Julia Gillard became the Minister for Industrial Relations, Workplace Relations. The great opportunity to deal with these issues was not confronted, in part because of difficulties with not having a clean majority in the Senate. But to get back to the report and then where we are now with the annual wage review from the point of view of working women, the ACTU points out that women are more likely to be reliant on minimum rates of pay and awards. And I haven't seen the numbers yet, but we will see them soon, is we will know just how many women, relative to men, are actually on the national minimum wage.
Mm.
Now, the ACT points out that women are more likely to be reliant on the minimum rates of pay and awards. One of the problems we have is that most activists in our modern union movement have a very poor grasp of what it, the significance of an award is, and secondly, the content of it and how it relates to enterprise bargaining and so on. But leave, we won't develop that any further today.
That's a particularly pet hate of yours, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
We'll talk about it one day.
So, now, the ACTU puts forward two demands in their report. Stronger equal pay laws in the Fair Work Act so that the Fair Work Commission can proactively tackle gender inequity across all of its functions. And that, of course, includes the annual wage review. And then urgent wage increases to ensure Australia's undervalued women workers get fair pay. And a significant increase in award minimum wages to ensure they are living wages.
And so that's part of beefing up the understanding of looking at the type of work that people are involved in and making it comparative to well-paid jobs that men dominate in.
Yes. Now, that is the big problem in the broken rules of the Fair Work Act, including in the interpretation of how the Act should be applied by the Fair Work Commission. Now, astonishingly, in this report, having said that...
Just as a matter of interest, do you know the male-female breakdown to the commissioners on in the Fair Work Commission?
That's a good question. I do not.
That's interesting, isn't it? Anyway, go on.
Well, the composition of the commission is in the hands of the minister.
And we know about that.
People retire or resign. What this government has been doing is stacking it with its own anti-union, anti-worker commissioners. That's another discussion.
A disgrace in itself. But go on. Yeah. Sorry, I interrupted.
Yes. Now, the astonishingly for me, anyway, this report from the ACTU, having said that urgent wage increases are needed, it's silent on the annual wage review, which is now at its midway point.
Mm.
Now, I don't understand that, and there may be a very...
You mean it hasn't heard its master's voice yet?
Well, it depends how you define the master, and that would be tragic if the ACTU, led by two wonderful women, is sort of defining its activity on that basis. I don't understand why that's the case, because the more education we have about the problems with the annual wage review and how it works, how it should be reformed and so on, the better. But nevertheless, it's silent.
Maybe it doesn't think that that mechanism is really very valuable.
Well, there's a lot of truth in that. It's certainly not very valuable if you submit to it. If you challenge it and organise to defeat it, then the outcome may be different. We don't know that because it's never been done. What is true about the ACTU, so despite the fact they're silent in this recent report, they will soon be putting forward their submission. Submissions are from all of the different parties, employers, governments, and, of course, the ACTU and some other organisations like ACOS. They are due to put in their submissions or claims, whatever you want to call it, by April the 1st. And then we will know what the ACTU is saying. Its record in terms of what it says in its submissions is very strong. Now, for a start, it is saying that the overall objective of the union movement is to lift the minimum wage to 60% of median full-time wages. I haven't got the figures exactly off the top.
Yeah, understood.
But that's the overall objective. So
Yeah, well, that shows you how lagging in behind the minimum wage is. And when you think about aged care workers calling for a 25% increase in their basic wage.
Yes, well, now that's done under a very important separate provision of the broken rules of the Fair Work Act. There is no guarantee of success on that front, given the composition of the commission these days. But it's a very important claim, and there is actually a serious campaign being developed by the unions in support of that claim, which is not dealt with through the annual wage review process, but through the award variation process, which is a separate process in the Fair Work Commission, and has separate possibilities and problems in terms of developing a realistic strategy.
So the issue of equal pay is still a very hot issue.
It is, absolutely. And I think, I mean, all of the ACTU submissions going back, you know, nearly 10 years or so, contain terrific information. We need, our whole movement needs more activists at the delegate and membership level who dedicate themselves to understanding the question of equal pay relative to overall wages struggles. We don't have enough. And the ACTU submissions and the response, and then also the submissions of the major employer groups, particularly the Australian Industry Group, and also the decisions, are a pretty good starting point to start learning. So people who are keen on this or need to be or want to be keen on this, it's a really good start because all of the information is available at the Fair Work Commission website and at the ACTU website. It's all there. And I can send you a set of links if you want to put that up at the webpage.
Yeah, yeah.
We need those. We need more activists at the delegate and membership level because the efforts of the bureaucrats in the union movement who run the Fair Work Commission submission are not adequate. They're very good insofar as they go in terms of the research. But consultation and polite submissions and so on and all that sort of stuff, which is required by the broken rules, it ain't enough.
Yeah, yeah. You need the...
That would mean that all of the efforts of those wonderful women like Zelda de Bujano, Edna Ryan, Jessie Street, Audrey McDonald, the Union of Australian Women, all of those in our history who have said, we're not going to be polite about this. We are going to intervene and organise to bring the women's claims, the specific women's claims, into a more powerful position in the society. And that's what they did. And we are lacking that at the present time, despite the quality of the content of the ACTU submissions.
All right. Well, that's a perfect point to finish, because I did indeed root out two versions of Don't Be Too Polite, Girls, which is what you are effectively telling people that the grassroots needs to stand up.
I'd be encouraging that. I don't need it, but it's a wonderful song, though.
Oh, yeah, no, it's a great song. And thank you very much, Don, for taking some time to have a chat with us today.
Looking forward to the next time. All the best to everybody and a happy and struggle-filled International Women's Day to all women in our movement and beyond.